Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
Hi, I'm Duncan.
And this week, we've watched Stardust City Rag, and now we're going to argue about whether it's going to make us quit Star Trek.
I would describe this episode as the Emily in Paris of Star Trek. I think I've perfectly summarised its impact and just that French accent that we hear.
It was very pretty, but... Very pretty, but also dull. And then the more you think about it, the worse it gets.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting choice, Duncan.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, I lost to the kind of depths of the internet is the original discussion that we had about the episode that genuinely did make me quit Star Trek, which was Shuttle Pod 1. This one, I have to say, it didn't quite make me quit Star Trek. It didn't really make me consider quitting Star Trek Picard, but it was absolutely a serious road bump for me. Having absolutely adored those first three episodes, that kind of three-part pilot, and then enjoyed a lot the fourth one, which felt much more kind of episodic, this one just absolutely baffled me. And I actually saw it, I was getting press screeners at the time, so I saw it about a week before like the majority of people did. And I was on a work trip in a hotel in Liverpool, and it came through from CBS at like 11:30 at night or something. And I thought, you know, really I should be going to bed, but I'll stay up and watch this episode. It'd be great. And I was just absolutely sort of floored by it and baffled by it. And I spent the rest of the week thinking, what on earth is going to happen when the Star Trek fandom sees this show? Because to me, I was kind of horrified by it, to be perfectly honest. You know, I felt like I had an understanding of what this new show was going to be. It was quite somber. It was quite serious. It was quite sort of contemplative. And Patrick Stewart was doing this kind of very muted version of Picard. And then this came out, and I just thought, this is, they've gone off the rails completely. And I was expecting the fandom to go nuts. And actually, when it happened, people seemed to enjoy it more than I expected. There are quite a lot of people who defend this episode. And in some ways, watching it just on its own, maybe it's not, I still don't think it's very good, but it is not as bad or as shocking as it was watching it the first time through. And I guess maybe when I saw it was before they put out the trailers or like the next week on stuff, which I think sometimes does prepare you a little bit when they're going to have a kind of tonal shift, they're going to kind of go somewhere weird. So I did see it completely cold in that sense. But I do think for a show that, you know, only had 10 episodes, it seemed to have quite a kind of carefully constructed arc. This one just feels like, I don't know, it's a bit like, you know, the Cat in the Hat, you know, when the parents go out and the Cat in the Hat comes around and just like throws everything up in the air and does mad things and causes chaos. And then next week, everything has to go back in the box and we kind of get back to what we were doing before. It feels like a total aberration to me personally.
Yeah, I did think before, I was like, should I watch the episode of Picard before this? And then I sort of opened my Amazon Prime thing yesterday and went, no, you know what? No, I won't. I'll just go straight into it because I think that's the only way to do whether it's a quitterable episode properly.
Mm.
And it just, I think it makes it worse. Because it's not situated in the context. You're just kind of like...
But it's not situated in context anyway. Other than, I suppose it's in the context of where they are and that Seven of Nine has suddenly randomly appeared in like the last 10 seconds of the previous episode. But other than that, it just feels totally, I mean, yes, it picks up on the kind of the plot arc of like, where's Maddox and so on, but tonally and kind of just in the kind of show that it's doing, it just feels like it belongs somewhere totally different. And I think you could do that in previous iterations of Star Trek when you had these long seasons. You could do the kind of madcap, you know, some of those episodes were great. I love Fistful of Datas. I love DS9 when they did those kind of holosuite episodes. You know, these kind of slightly mad, slightly off the wall, cheesy, silly episodes. And that's what it sort of feels like this episode is being. And yet at the same time, I mean, we were talking about just before we started recording, it's bookended by this kind of horrific violence. It's, you know, you've got these two really gruesome torture slash murder scenes at either end. Yeah. And then this kind of wacky, weird romp in the middle of it. It's a very strange choice, I think.
I wondered how seasoned Trekkies were reacting to that scene, because I, both times watching that episode, I hadn't seen all of Voyager. I mm-hmm. barely got to Seven's part. And is the others two like characters not like very like iconic or well known, and then it just begins with their death and suddenly we're thrust into this comedic sort of thing in the middle?
I don't, I mean, I am a bit skeptical. Manu Intiraimi, who originally played Icheb, was complaining about the death of his beloved character. I have to say, I've never met a Star Trek fan who loved Icheb. I think he was annoying on the show. He was not very good. And Manu Intiraimi is a complete dickhead,
he's a
frankly.
Shit.
I think there was an element of trolling on that part, that basically they were like, you know, yeah, we'll bring this character back just to fridge him.
And then you don't get to be the fridge.
You don't even get to be fridged, yeah, in that scene. We're going to recast and then fridge your character. It was almost, and it was quite fun just to watch him sort of imploding on Twitter about this happening to his character. But at the same time, I don't really feel, okay, you could love, you know, there are people who love Captain Kirk but don't love William Shatner. You can choose to differentiate, but I'm not sure there are many people out there who are like passionate Icheb fans, regardless of their views on Manu Intiraimi. So I don't know. I suppose in some ways it was quite an easy frigid. I mean, to kill Icheb and then to kill Maddox. These are two characters who, well, Icheb is quite annoying and Maddox is a complete, you know, arsehole, really. So you're kind of, you know, I mean, in Measure of a Man. He's not someone who you're going to be sad about, you know, finding out that he's been off. He seems a bit more likable in this one because he makes cookies and so on. But, you know, the original version of Maddox, I think, is, it's a slightly odd choice to kind of, for us to care what happens to him, because he was so unpleasant when we met him before.
Oh, well, I have no idea what he does. But Seven is so beloved. When she was describing him as her son, I thought, oh God, this is something that's going to crush everyone. And that's just inputted in. Just nothing.
No, I think it's true. No, it's true. There was one quite nice episode where that whole thing about him not having a cortical nose because he gave it to her and so on. And they, you know, I suppose if you want to get, he played a role in Seven of Nine's story on Voyager. I never liked him, you know, back 20 odd years ago or whatever. And but at the same time, it doesn't mean that I particularly wanted to see him brutally murdered in this.
It's such a weird start to an episode. Yeah. Let's get into this, because it's just like we have like the previously, which, you know, it's quite useful because I didn't care to rewatch it. But it's just like, oh, so 709 is here. And then we just get to watch this. You know, I'm not going to describe graphic violence. I'm just going to say we get to watch Icheb get tortured.
Yeah.
And then 709 turns up and has to do a mercy killing. Which is not... It's just that I'm not sure why they needed... I mean, I know why they needed to do it for the plot. But I also don't know why they needed to do it for the plot.
Like, they do have transporters. I mean, well, and he seemed like he was, you know, we've seen people recover from worse treatment before in Star Trek. I don't quite get that, other than it, you know, it had to sort of up the stakes dramatically.
So he dies before the credits, the opening credits. That's a blatant insult then.
Yeah.
Someone isn't happy with him.
So we have, like, they're going to Stardust City, which, shit name, by the way. It's a really shit name. We have, what's his name, this mob boss who dresses like she's on Drag Race, which I'm not sure if that's a compliment or an insult.
We have another...
No, she was meant to be a Cation originally, which I do think, I think that would only have made the episode more bizarre.
It would have made it more gay.
It is quite fascinating. Yeah, and also, it would have kind of... I feel it would have upped the camp even more, which, you know, if that's what they're going for, on one level it does seem... But that's the thing. It's like, okay, fair enough. Star Trek can do a kind of mad camp episode if they want to. And that might have been quite fun. But I don't think you can do it when, in the context of the overall story, you're dealing with all this trauma and, you know, revenge and really dark nasty
if
stuff.
If she was Cajun, people would stan her and it would be a problem.
Exactly. Yeah, we ended up having Star Trek cat girl discourse and I'm not ready for that. Mm. I'm not ready for that. So it turns out that, I mean, the other note here is that her enforcer is wearing a futuristic double-breasted pinstripe. And I'm just, that's nice. Mm-hmm. I like his pinstripe.
Not forgetting her name. I mean, when I first saw this, as I say, it was late at night. I was watching it on my iPad. Okay, her name is Vajazel, but I was convinced she was called Vajazzle. Is this accidental? What on earth is going on here?
Anne write this.
Sorry, no.
Amad did not write this. It was Kirsten Byer.
Someone who hasn't seen The Only Way Is Essex wrote this.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Maybe that's the answer. Yeah.
I mean, that's a transatlantic product we did not want to have cross the Atlantic.
But again, it's yet another element of this episode that kind of makes you go, what? Hang on, you know, what's going on here?
So it turns out that Bruce Maddox has been like working in secret for the mob in a lab, and then it turns out that it's a really bizarre scene, and it really actually doesn't make sense to me. It's like basically Bruce Maddox is here, we need to establish that he's been here for a while.
It just feels very cliche. The entire thing of I've been poisoned and it's just going to play out in this perfectly timed way just seems a little too...
It's very
true. On the nose. Also,
there's no safety glass in 2399. And that glass just smashed into 1,000 people. If that was a workplace, I would have the union in.
By then the glass would dematerialize and magically go back into the replicator or something, you know. Yeah, it might just bounce, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been quite funny if he'd fallen on the glass and just bounced away.
She's probably poisoning people all the time. She doesn't have those safety glasses.
And then we go into Act One and we get the whole Free Cloud is a Libertarian Paradise, to which I'm going to reply by just opening this beer and having a sip.
Is part where Seven and Picard are talking?
Yeah.
Because I've really just... I've forgotten the overarching plot of Picard. It's so... Listen, so watching this episode to remind myself, as we have said, is no help.
I mean, all I have here is that whoever wrote this script fundamentally went in for the... Yeah, get... Seven of Nine is definitely gay.
Mm.
They definitely looked at the Het Seven of Nine and went, that no. And that's immediately apparent from how they've cost.
And yeah. I mean, which is... I mean, I would say one of the positive things this episode does is it kind of introduces this idea of this queer Seven. At the same time, it does it in this very, or at least when I watched it at midnight, whatever, in Liverpool, I thought that was the one thing that stood out to me as like, wow, that's quite interesting. That's an interesting choice. And then again, I was waiting a week for the fans to watch the episode and see, what do they make of this car crash of a, episode, but also what do they make of this interesting choice to queer this character who is such a kind of, who was basically only brought onto Star Trek as a kind of sex object, basically, as Rick Berman and so on saw her. To then give her this kind of queer storyline is quite a subversive thing to do. But then I discovered that about half the fans who watched it didn't even pick up on it. And there were these, angry debates on Twitter saying, what are you talking about? You're just reading stuff into this. There's no, until I see it confirmed on screen, Seven is as straight as she was when she was having picnics with Chakotay on Voyager, So it kind of activated this whole weird thing. And it sort of tapped into this issue that, Star Trek has always had historically, up until, I suppose, Discovery, of dealing with these kind of queer storylines, but in this kind of hedging way. So, so you have, say, with a character like Garak, who is sort of queer-coded in various ways, and yet we're supposed to believe that he's has this relationship with Zial, which feels totally...
It feels nonce. Whenever I see hear about Garak and Zial, I just have a hand on the nonce button. Like, why do you... I don't know why they thought the solution to we don't want to make Garak gay is to pair him with a teenager.
Mm. That's true. Somehow, it was a weird choice.
Somehow some paedophilic or inappropriately aged relationship is more appropriate than being gay. That's Berman's choice there.
Yeah.
So I guess...
Well, anyway, I think although this episode is, I like the fact that it brings in this aspect of Seven's storyline, which I think makes her it's an interesting addition to that character. They probably should have made it. I mean, maybe they thought it was clear enough, because it seemed pretty clear to me that that's what was being alluded to, but they obviously didn't make it clear enough for a lot of the audience. And then you had to wait right until pretty much the final shot of the final episode to get this, again, very muted, hand-holding moment as your kind of clue of like, yes, that is what, that is what we were saying before in case you missed it somehow. I don't know, it just feels, it again feels like something that's not being handled very well, or not being, it's like that was a sort of something they wanted to do with this episode. And I sort of think with Kirsten Beyer writing it, you can see, she's written lots of Voyager novels. She's the one who's kind of managed to reinvent Voyager in some ways. I mean, the reason people love those novels is characters like Chakotay, for example, like Harry, some of the characters that didn't really work very well on Voyager, she's managed to go back and dig into them and kind of bring them out of themselves a bit and kind of make them work dramatically. And I quite like the fact that I felt like she was saying with Seven, look, here are some of the problems around Seven's sort of presentation and identity and where this character comes from. Here's a way of sort of complicating that or doing something interesting with that. But again, it feels like, this episode just wants to throw everything. It's kind of everything but the kitchen sink episode. And you can't, it just doesn't work when you're doing all this
so
other stuff
much
as well.
There's going on in this episode, because there's all the stuff about, like, basically, we learn what Seven has been up to since the last episode of Voyager in basically one conversation, where it's like she works with the Fenris Rangers, they work in the neutral zone. She's now basically a hard-ass gumshoe walking the mean streets of the neutral zone, which I want that TV show instead.
Yeah, definitely.
Which I think...
Well, who knows? Maybe we'll get it. They were discussing it, I think, at one point.
I think systemic of one of the problems of Picard, which is that it is basically 3 to 5 different TV shows rammed into one.
I also wonder if this episode was supposed to be multiple, because there is a few storylines going on. It seems that chaotic, but maybe they had to fit things in. I mean, the Raffi storyline that we're going to address later seems like a whole other issue.
Yeah, that's...
And again, they don't fit. They don't feel like they fit. And actually, I mean, maybe this is jumping ahead a bit, but the Raffi storyline, not only does it sort of feel like a tonal mismatch, it feels like a mismatch, but it also, there's something really weird about when she says she's leaving, and I felt this, I watched Picard through twice, I think, and then I watched this episode today. Every time I've seen it, I've been like, oh yeah, she was meant to be leaving. Somehow that hasn't stuck, that idea. Do you know what I mean? Like somehow that hasn't kind of sunk in. So it always comes as a surprise and it seems quite random. Oh, she's suddenly going to just wander off in the midst of this ongoing storyline. And then she comes back equally randomly at the end. And they don't even tell us that she's come back. They're just like, oh yeah, she's off in her room. It's like a total non... And that was the whole, ostensible reason for getting her on the ship. Turns out to be a total kind of non thing. So she gets this one sort of dramatic scene, which is fine, I guess, on its own. Again, on its own terms, it's, these kind of moments work, and there are moments in the episode that work. That scene between Picard and Seven at the end, works pretty well on its own. But it's never, not only is it not more than the sum of its parts, it's just like its parts are all working against each other somehow and confusing each other. And,
it feels like they had this idea for Stardust City. And then they had a meeting where they went, we'd figure out what to do with this. And then they had 3 different really good ideas. But then
and they ended up doing all of them.
Yeah, 3 different good ideas at once is not one even better idea. It turns out, so eventually Picard is basically like, do you want to come with us? At least the free cloud. And we get, the double curseness of Maddox having to explain to Jurati how baking works, which has the knowledge of baking just been lost in the the 200 years since the replicator's been invented? I highly doubt it.
I buy that, because I feel like Star Trek does present, obviously our characters who we love are into cooking or whatever, Sisko cooks in his quarters, we have Riker making quite weird scene with Riker making eggs and so on. But say Janeway has established that Starfleet captains may know nothing about, she basically can use a microwave and that's her idea.
That's the thing.
So I sort of buy that. At the same time, I think their relationship, I mean, again, talking about Garak and Zial, is a bit kind of icky. And I think if you read the sort of, Una McCormack wrote a great novel Lysol Picard prequel novel.
I'm
pretty sure she was she was actually his student at the time, which again sort of makes it even more of a weird, I don't know, slightly uncomfortable thing. But my sense was she was given that. I don't mean that she necessarily made it seem really romantic and great or whatever, because that's not sort of what I picked up on reading that book even. It felt a bit weird to me, but I don't know. Again, it sort of adds this whole extra level of, I mean, that's another really weird thing that's going on in this episode. It's this kind of random murder plot.
Weird shit going on.
I know.
But I mean,
I suspect was not the original plan. I have this theory about season one of Picard that because it's all this sort of search for Maddox, then they do this really weird thing where they kill Maddox halfway through. And then basically Brent Spiner plays the role of the person that they're looking for, you know, at the very end, who is effectively the Maddox character, but transferred to this new Sun character. I feel like at some point it's going to come out that there was, you know, they had sort of some plan, they were searching for Maddox the whole time. And then Brent Spiner basically said, I enjoyed my cameo in episode one or whatever. I'm up for doing a bit more. And they kind of built that up. Because again, that's another aspect of the structure of the season that feels very weird. Like it's all about this one kind of MacGuffin is Maddox. And then weirdly, as soon as they get to him, he's off. And then it has to be about something else. I don't know. And it's this MacGuffin legacy character they brought back. Exactly. It's this legacy character that's brought back, but we hardly get to spend any time with him. And it doesn't really seem to mean anything. And they recast him as well as recast. I mean, this is the episode that recasts two characters, you know, not just Maddox, but Icheb as well. I don't know. It's this weird. I can't really express how weird this episode is to me.
Nothing will ever be as cursed as the pop-up scene, though. The scene where we get the space pop-ups.
Yeah. Which is just... the virtual thing that she finds.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why. I think this is them trying to be cute. This is the thing. We have these, like...
The whole... Everything about Free Card upsets me, because I think fundamentally what upset me most about this episode was, in reply to it, Michael Chapman put on Instagram or something, basically like, you know, I actually really don't like the fact that Star Trek doesn't have money in the future. It's just like, great, sure, but it's a bit irritating that, like, their presentation of what this Free Card looks a bit... I'm sounding like one of the Doomcock bastards now.
Oh, no. Don't
But it's
say
a little
that.
Bit like... I mean, the other thing that bugs me about Free Card is it's, like, basically... It's just basically one, hey, you want to pause it to see the reference? Because it's like Mr. Box Barber's Quark's Bar. Yes. It's like just...
It's too much. It's fan service. You know, it's cheap fan service is the problem.
It's cheap fan service.
And also, you're right. You know, the whole concept of Free Cloud.
It
doesn't feel like... I mean, I don't want to be the guy saying this doesn't belong in Star Trek or this isn't Star Trek or whatever. But I don't know. Somehow, I sort of feel like DS9 managed to do capitalism within Star Trek and make it work. It felt believable, you know, with Quarks. Somehow this version of doing capitalism as sort of Space Vegas on steroids, I don't know, it feels very broad. It feels more Star Wars than Star Trek somehow. Do you know what I mean? It's like the high-tech cantina somehow, you know.
Yeah, we had less time to be in deal, like, into these characters. I mean, it's ultimately still a new crew. So them doing silly things seems like there was no nostalgia element, I guess, to that.
Yeah.
To them just playing around.
I mean, the thing about...
We barely know who they are already, you know, other than Picard.
Even the Picard playing around is just cringe.
The Picard, I have to say, for me, the Picard playing, you know, Patrick Stewart, who is a wonderful actor, you know, the shining jewel in Star Trek as far as acting is concerned, I think he's terrible in this episode. And I actually think he drags it down further than it otherwise might need to have been dragged down. He just feels like this, you know, this silly French accent that he does. I know he thinks it's hilarious because I've seen him do it on like dozens of chat shows where he tells this anecdote, which is, you know, it's fine for a chat show where he says, you know, Gene Roddenberry originally wanted Picard to have a French accent. He does this thing about Spice, Zivanel Fondier. You know, he does this whole kind of shit. But that's what it felt like. It's like his mate Frakes was directing the episode and said to him, hey, Patrick, you know that stupid French accent that you do that everyone thinks is really funny? Can you do that in this episode? And again, it's sort of, you know, it's kind of an in-joke, isn't it? Because Picard's meant to be French. And in the first episode, we saw him speaking French to people. And now he's playing this kind of parody of like a sort of allo French person. And it's just, it completely takes me out of it, because I don't for a second believe that that is Jean-Luc Picard playing that character. It's very obviously Patrick Stewart playing that character. And it feels like a blooper reel or something. It doesn't feel like something that belongs in the world of Star Trek. We've seen Jean-Luc Picard do bad acting comedically, you know, with Dixon Hill, or with his kind of, you know, that episode where he had to romance Roxana Troy. And so, you know, he can do that. He can play Picard as a bad actor.
Or there's like Gambit.
Fine, but he doesn't play it like that. This is, yeah, exactly. This is a totally different kind of performance. It just doesn't fit at all with anything that we've seen, you know, in those seven seasons of Next Gen. It just feels like Patrick Stewart messing around because his old friend happens to be directing and will kind of let him get away with anything to me.
It's, I mean, the whole scene, the whole sequence, I think that's the problem, is that it would be, this whole episode would be really good if we knew these characters. I think that's the thing, is that we don't know these characters, so we don't know if they're acting out of character. The Picard acting out of character is that it's just, it's not out of character like, ha ha ha, he's being weird. It's just, I don't think he'd ever be like this.
We don't understand their dynamics.
Yeah.
Because we've not seen them in play for long enough.
The only part I enjoyed was Elnor having no idea what was going on. Because he's a sweetie.
I love him.
And he's so confused. And he looks
even
so
that, confused. Even that, I felt he's pushing it. Because it is quite sweet. But it just makes him look like an idiot on another level. And we've only just met this character. Do you know what I mean? They did quite a good job of introducing him in the previous episode. This is the first time we're going to see him as a member of the crew.
Yeah, he does what's get his a really role?
And he's just like totally, yeah, you know, and then it's followed up with this kind of, he just seems totally useless in this episode.
He's a gentle assassin. And I mean, you know.
I think it would have been good if they had an episode of him being a badass between the introduction and this.
Yeah. Yeah,
like have space for him to be like, oh man, this man is hard, and then actually, you know, he has no social awareness whatsoever.
Yeah,
we know that he will be ready when we need him.
I guess so. Yeah, I was just gonna say, you know, Rios looks cool in that outfit. I do, you know, I feel like he kind of sells it. He's the only one, to be honest, I think, really sells this whole, you know, undercover thing somehow. And it's mainly about the costume. I mean, the costume, you know, there's a lot of work has gone into costuming this episode. Whatever you think of Patrick Stewart's performance, his costume is kind of amazing in a way. Rios's costume is great, but it's also just such a weird, this idea that, you know, to be a, whatever they're, not a fencer, what are they called, to be a facer, you have to be flamboyant, an OTT. It's just such a weird, I don't know, none of it makes sense to me. It's just, there's too many mad ideas in this show, and it's actually quite hard to follow what's going on at times, I think. And it's not a particularly complicated story, so it shouldn't be that hard to follow. It's sort of slightly overwhelming somehow.
I did like, I can't remember if this is an introduction, but I did like Move Up, is it? The one who can smell out lies. I think that was an interesting, I mean, he's not previously in Trek canon, is he? I don't know.
No, I don't think Beta enough.
But
no.
I think it was an interesting addition, but it also just, maybe because the episode made it seem that way, but it did also seem strange, maybe a bit cliche that he could literally smell out lies, and it was just going to be perfectly impotent in this situation that would, you know, cause some hijinks.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's like they create this species that can smell out lies, and then he can't.
Like,
it
doesn't, that character doesn't really work. His powers were immediately.
Yeah.
Like, so we have this whole fast, sort of semi-fast scene of just to hurry us along into the plot, where they explain their plan while doing the plan. It's all very convoluted and nonsense. Cinematography that keeps cutting between them doing the thing and then talking about doing the scene, like a bad heist film that actually made it very difficult to keep track of what was going on.
Exactly, and they've done that before. I feel like they've done that in other episodes of Picard. They did it in the second episode, I think, didn't they? And again, it kind of confused people then. And I think they do it later on as well. I feel like of all of them, this is the most confusing somehow.
Yeah, they need to stop.
Partly because
it
seems to go on, and there's so many different, and it's like everyone has their role, and they all have to be sort of briefed separately. And then but we have to see what they're doing with that as well. And then it just feels weird because it's like, okay, you've set up the stakes of the situation to some extent. You set up the threat. There's this guy who can smell out lies or whatever. And then we're kind of in the situation and you're kind of like, okay, there's some degree of tension here, I suppose, potentially. And then we're back in, you know, the chateau you know, the Hollow Chateau, talking about the next kind of problem that has to be sorted out, or like working out how the handcuffs work. It does feel like a sort of...
I feel like you have a lot of suppressed anger about this episode.
That's what you want on this podcast, though, right?
What we want. We feel your frustration, but like, you're sort of sitting here like, you know, this is normally the amount of thoughts I have about Klingon warships, and like, I get it.
Yeah. John, you have many triggers.
I do kind of hate this episode. And the main reason I hate it is I love the Picard show. I went to the premiere in the West End. I got to interview Patrick Stewart. It was a great, you know, it was for me as a long-term Star Trek fan, that show was an amazing experience. And those first three episodes, I just thought were beautiful and kind of perfect. And this sort of wonderful tone setting and kind of everything about them, it sort of, you know, it felt like this kind of serious grown-up sort of interesting story we were embarking on. And then, as I say, like the fourth episode was a bit random in some ways, but, and there were things I didn't love about it, but overall I thought it kind of brought in some interesting ideas and it seemed to kind of work quite well. And I liked the fact it felt very episodic and like this is the planet of the week and so on. And then with this one, I just felt, what are they doing? Because it seemed, those first three episodes, it felt so much like they had a plan for what the show was doing and how it was going to work. And you felt like you were in kind of safe hands. And then they just chuck this in the mix.
Disappointment in context. You know. I mean, let's take the disappointment in context. You know, first season of TNG, that wasn't perfect. We had
first season of TNG was genuinely one of the worst things ever put to script.
Yeah.
I think the disappointment is that the first season of TNG is episodic, so it has peaks and troughs. Whereas this was all written at once by the same sort of people, and we still got, and it was designed to be still coherent. Got peaks and troughs. And then the ones in the artifact are all tied together quite well.
Yeah.
And then the one, and the last arc is tied together. It's just like all the slot episodes.
What's that?
I think what they observe, though, is like in the formula of Star Trek, there's always that little fun element, and they had tried to input that in. I think that's what maybe modern Trek struggles with, getting that sort of weird.
I think you're right there, yeah.
In the same.
Maybe they were worried this show was just too depressing, because I suppose at the start it does seem a bit gloomy and it's all quite, you know, it's the cellos and the kind of like serious, moody stuff going on. But I feel like you can't. Okay, if you think that's an issue, then don't make that show. But I like the fact they were making that show. I was surprised at how depressing it was to begin with, but I kind of came on board with that and accepted that. And that's the show I thought we were watching. And I think, you know, Star Trek historically can do different genres. It can do courtroom drama. It can do romantic comedy. It can do kind of wacky, offbeat, you know, kind of zany stuff.
It can do all these things. Analogies of racial conflict.
Of course, yeah, it can do all these things. It can do, yeah, clunky morality plays or, you know, whatever. It can even do kind of action adventure spectaculars. But I don't know, I feel like with a show these days, when you've got, you know, such a short number of episodes, you know, 10 episodes or whatever, I like it when they can do something a little bit different. I liked, you know, Discovery did Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. I loved that episode. That was quite off the wall. That was a kind of an episodic show. It didn't really, you know, come from anywhere or go anywhere particularly. It worked really well. But I just think you can't, I don't know, well, I don't want to say you can and can't do, but for me, with this particular show, certainly in that particular season and what we'd seen before, it just felt like it didn't fit. It didn't belong. It feels like the odd one out of, you know, that whole first season. And some of the episodes are better than others, but this is the kind of standout that doesn't seem to belong to me anyway with the rest of it. So I don't know, maybe I'm still angry about it. It didn't make me quit Star Trek. It didn't make me quit Star Trek Picard, but it made me lose a bit of confidence that this show was going to be as good as I had thought it was going to be, if you know what I mean. It made me worry that they maybe weren't quite as sure of where they were going as they had seemed to be.
Let's move on to the next scene, because we come to another disjointed section of the episode where it's Raffi's familial backstory, and we see her relationship with her son is strained, basically because she's been obsessed with sort of uncovering this conspiracy that's going on with Starfleet. It was nice to see her son.
He looks like a nice young man.
Lovely man. I think that just wasn't time for me to be emotionally invested in in this little side story. It was like, oh, you haven't been very present in your son's life. Oh no, and now he's got a girlfriend. She's pregnant, and I've seen her for 30 seconds.
She seems
that's
nice.
That's sad, I guess.
It's also tricky because it's hard not to, because obviously we identify with Rafi, even if you can kind of see that the son might have a point, and clearly, you know, maybe she wasn't a great mother, and maybe, you know, there are a lot of problems, you know, we know she has these kind of addiction problems and so on. It's hard not to see it quite strongly from her point of view and feel like he's being really unfair somehow. Yeah, exactly, a bit of a prick. But
yeah,
I don't know, it doesn't quite, I feel like you know in historically Star Trek could have done this, could have been a 44 minute episode really about this character and you know her hooking, you know, meeting up with her son and kind of working out these issues, and it could have played out and it could have been a bit more, there could have been a bit more to it. We literally get one scene and that's it for that storyline, and it doesn't feel enough. And we've had this whole stuff about Rafi's has dependency on various drugs or whatever. We have this kind of whole thing about her being a sort of conspiracy theorist who obviously is going to turn out to be right. I don't know, it feels a little bit kind of shorthand. I do think it works in some ways. I like the moment. I mean, I think Michelle Hurd plays it well. I like the moment where she goes from kind of trying to say, you know, I've changed, I'm better now, I'm clean, to she just cannot, like he pushes that button and she can't resist saying, well, this thing didn't make sense. You know, basically going down the conspiracy route. I quite like that. I think that works. Again, you know, there are moments in this episode that work really well because the actors kind of bring it, and there's a kind of kernel of something interesting there. But I'm not sure that it quite, for me, the scene as a whole doesn't fit all that well, because again, it has nothing to do with the episode that we're watching. It's just kind of what Rafi did meanwhile.
It does kind of capture one of the problems with Picard, is that the actors aren't bad. The script just seems very off. Like, I don't actually think any of the actors on this are shit. We're not talking like Babylon 5 here, whereas the scripts just don't seem to work. Like, it's a bit earlier on where, like, she's putting the fake Rafi's putting the fake restraints on Seven, and she's like, oh, I admire the work you do. And it feels very staccato and static and out of place. Whereas it's clearly meant to be sort of sowing the seeds for their sort of romantic, relationship future.
Well, is it, or did that just come from nowhere, you know, a little while down the road when they realised they'd kind of written this queer Seven and they ought to
do
something?
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on this one.
No, but that moment between Rafi and Seven in the finale, it was improvised on set. That was not in the script.
Wait, really?
So the actors invented that
relationship.
So it's
never going to be addressed again?
Nope. So, I mean, which means that those actors created a relationship that now in season two they're going to have to acknowledge or do something about. I mean, obviously someone okayed it, I guess, because it's not like you can improvise anything you like. So, someone must have said, oh yeah, fine, let's go with that. But at the same time, like, that's sort of what I mean. Again, it's like this weird, okay, so they're making this big decision to bring back this legacy character and to give her, you know, this sort of, I was going to say queer storyline. It's not a queer storyline, is it? But to, you know, to give her this kind of, to add something to her character that is interesting one way or another, but they're kind of not really doing it somehow. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's very baby steps. It's very kind of half baked. And it takes the actors to actually say, you know, let's push this a little bit further, or let's kind of do something that kind of acknowledges this moment a bit more. So I don't know, but
this makes me realize if they weren't going to address that relationship, even just that hand movement, like that hand holding was simple. They weren't going to address that relationship at all. It's sort of like with Lower Decks and their so-called queer representation, which is just like Mariner saying that she was like attracted to a female.
Well, it's like
it's kind of dumb things that don't really do much.
But the Lower Decks thing was like that captain who comes in for one episode. She went to the academy with like their exes, and it's like, yeah, there's a difference. Michael Mahan went saying it in saying that they were exes on a podcast and having them explicitly mention on the show.
This is like, J.K. Rowling saying that Dumbledore is gay just after she's, you know, published the last of her seven books, when she, you know, she could easily
deciding to wage war and deciding that you needed to defend bathrooms from this.
She has no authority on anything LGBT.
But it's like it feels quite cynical. It's like you want the brownie points without actually, I don't know, it feels like a hedge. Again, I suppose that's what I'm saying. It feels like a very weak, like, yeah, it's easy to say, well, once the actual thing is out there and you've done all of that, to then say, oh, you know, well, this is what I was thinking in the back of my, well, this is the kind of, this is my headcanon and I'm the writer, so therefore it's sort of a bit more real than yours. But it's like,
it doesn't help that the fact that Seven and this I'm gonna call it Bejazzle, because why not? Bejazzle was shagging. You know, making queer coding like heroes and villains is bad sometimes. You know, it works in some senses. You know, I'm not gonna talk about She-Ra on the podcast because I'll get hit. But if you do it and the villain is coded to not be redeemed, you're basically sort of saying, in a sense, that the queer relationship was an aberration caused by villainry.
Yeah, that is a problem exactly. Star Trek has always had. Even in DS9, which probably has the most queer representation, it's all in the mirror universe. It's all bisexual, but they're duplicitous and sneaky. It's part of that sort of character. I mean, it's a character flaw, ultimately, it's presented as. So.
And arguably, you get that picked up a bit in Discovery as well with Giorgio, you know, mirrors Giorgio and that kind of.
Discovery is a television show that fell into the Star Trek trap of making fascists cool. Stop making fascists cool. They suck. They have model railways and don't know how to win wars. Fascists are boring. Why does nobody get this?
It's like they set themselves this. I feel like they set themselves a weird challenge with Mira Giorgio to try and make her likable enough that, you know, she can have this spin-off series. They have sort of started to do it, I think, with Discovery Season 3, and they put that two-parter in, which, I mean, talking about episodes that don't really go anywhere or have folks just.
Let's not get distracted.
This is our kind of backdoor pilot for it, you know, and I enjoyed it and whatever. And I feel like I was very skeptical that they could sort of find a way of maybe not redeeming, but at least kind of taking the edges off this character. They have sort of managed to do it a bit. There's
I'm
one
calling
of the
it
novels
now. They're
as well.
Not going to make that show. They have said they're not going to start production until one of the Trek shows were in production finishes. And I don't think any of Strange New Worlds, Picard, Discovery, Lower Decks, or Prodigy are going to be finishing in the next 3 or 4 years. I just don't think they're going to make it because they can't just have Michelle Yeoh on call until one of those shows gets ended. I just genuinely think that they killed her in the second episode of Discovery and they've regretted that since.
Yeah.
Like they did that and they shouldn't have, and there's nothing they can do about it. Anyway, should we get back on topic?
Yeah,
sorry.
Okay, so where were we?
I hate this episode so much that I literally
we do
about any other.
I mean, we're barely following our usual format going through because actually this episode is too. I actually think this episode might be too incoherent to follow our usual acting.
If it's too incoherent for us, that's a big problem.
Yeah, because we're sort of now at the point where we're revealed that Seven was actually pulling a fast one on all of them because she wants to kill her ex, who honestly deserves to die because she hacks up ex-Borg people.
And she antagonizes her. She's like, oh, you're still upset that I like killed your friend or tore him apart? Something like very evocative, she says. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough.
You know what? I mean, murder is bad, but...
but some
couple of limbs could be shot off, you know, ruin that drag race costume she's wearing.
And Picard's back to his usual sort of position of, you know, higher morality, and it's like there's no solace in revenge.
I mean, he's
I'm just vindictive now. Like, you can get revenge.
He's not wrong, but he's also not right either. I guess that's kind of the point of Picard, is that Picard isn't wrong. He's just not right either.
It's that kind of problem you get with Picard, though, I think. I mean, it's the same problem, I would say, that you get in Insurrection, where Picard, he's not wrong in Insurrection. At the same time, he feels, his argument feels a bit weak somehow. And sometimes his arguments feel so principled that it feels a little bit like he doesn't quite live in the real world. Do you know what I mean? There's an element of sort of, especially like in Next Gen, okay, that was the world of Star Trek at that time. It made perfect sense. By the time you get to DS9, the whole sort of underpinning of Star Trek has shifted and changed, and it is much more shades of grey and it is much more difficult and a bit tortured. And Picard just kind of, sometimes he seems a little bit almost naive somehow. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it's also
strange. And I think in this episode, it's...
The Picard naivety is gone after Best of Both Worlds. And that's an important shift in the character. And that's one they carry forward. But I think I think it's been 30 years. It's been 35, 36 years since Picard was last on television screens. And that's a bit too long. You know, this isn't the gap between TOS and TNP. I just still don't think this show should have been made. That's a hot take. No. This is a hot take. This isn't a ha-ha-ha, we've ruined Star Trek. It's more just like, I'm just not sure it needed to be made.
I love this show. I feel like I really loved the Picard show, and I'm looking forward to season two, and I hope they manage to kind of make it work. I think this episode shouldn't have been made, personally. I mean, I don't know. I feel like maybe they should have done a 6-episode season or, you know, an 8-episode season or something, you know, and just really streamlined it. Or even done it as a mini-series or something.
Make it a 3-hour film like The Irishman.
Yeah.
I
do get what you're saying. And, you know, it does feel a bit like everything gets rebooted these days. I mean, we've got a Frasier reboot. You know, was being announced yesterday, I think. I mean, everything, it felt like, for me, certainly, as someone who sort of lived through all this the first time around, it does feel like everything is kind of coming back again. At the same time, I love Patrick Stewart. I love Picard. I thought they did something really interesting with those first few episodes. I enjoyed the latter. I loved Nepenthe. I loved what they did there. I enjoyed the kind of latter arc of the season. The finale, I think, was a little bit off the wall again, but, you know, not to the extent that this one is. I just think they need to maybe be a little bit clearer about what kind of show it is that they're doing. Do you know what I mean? It's very hard for them to...
Is there really that much pushback, or is it just allowed?
It feels like it.
It must feel like a lot of pushback from inside a writer's room.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, they're aware that they're not just getting... I mean, okay, DS9, you know, in the documentary, they talk about they get these letters... You know, like the I demand
Daniel Martinico.
You know,
Daniel Martinico, a legend. They, you know, should always.
But they probably weren't, you know, being kind of harassed on social media constantly, and there wasn't this level of I don't know. You may be right. Maybe there's not actually as much of it as it seems, but there's enough that it feels like it's kind of constantly simmering there in this rather toxic, nasty way, and that can't possibly have a good influence on the people who are trying to do what they think, you know, trying to work out what they want to do with it in the way that, say, you know, important to it somehow. Well, I mean, if they do that Section 31 show, which I never really wanted them, I was never wild about that idea in the first place. Well, I know, you know, but like if they do it, okay, fine, but do it and do it, whatever it is, it's like some dark, I don't know, it's 24 or it's, you know, whatever it's trying to be that. Don't do that for like 5 episodes and then think, oh, we're a bit bored of this. Let's do something totally different. Because, you know, otherwise what's the point of having all these different Trek shows that are pitched into different genres and different kind of demographics and so on? I don't know. Maybe I feel like I sound really sort of conservative and boring about this.
Olivia will edit it so you sound very interesting.
I do like Star Trek kind of going off the wall and doing things that are a bit mad sometimes, but I feel like when it works, it's great, and when it doesn't work, it's kind of cringy. And this one,
that's
for me,
what
it
this
feels,
podcast is about.
That's exactly. And this one, for me, this is not from the director of First Contact. This is from the director of Insurrection. This is like when we try and do something funny and, yeah, we're having fun, but you're sitting in the audience, you might be having less fun.
Oh, my God.
That's what
right.
It feels like. It's,
yeah,
you know,
oh, my
Patrick
God. Patrick
Stewart is having a great time in this episode, but that's not necessarily what makes the best.
Yeah, they all love. They all look like they're having a lot of fun, but are we?
No. And partly because Picard would not enjoy this. Picard would not think this was fun. Picard would think this was excruciating, having to do this. You know, Patrick Stewart thinks it's fun because he's an actor. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that actors enjoy, is, you know, playing different roles
he's
and getting to be hammy.
Older.
And you
he
know.
Might be into those things now.
Well, no kink shaming on the podcast, Olivia. We've been over this several times. No kink shaming on the podcast.
Carefree now. So
okay, so Picard...
Seven tries to kill everyone?
Seven tries to kill everyone, so then Picard's like, no killing everyone, we're going home. He's like, right, that's it, back to Winnipeg.
Suddenly appear on the ship and then everyone's just ready to go?
Well, they have Maddox now, and we have student-teacher cursed relationship getting dealt with. And then Seven's like, it's okay, I'm going to go back to the planet and definitely not kill my ex. Do you mind if I take these automatic weapons? Is that okay? Am I allowed to do that? And Picard just sort of looks at her, looks at the weapon that goes,
sure thing.
Have the automatic weapon. I'm sure you'll be so sensible with them.
Oh, God.
And then she immediately goes down and vaporizes her ex in a pile of, into a cloud of matter. What's and then goes out guns blazing like the end of Butch Cassidy.
That was... even that part was almost comical because she's just, no one's hitting her. She's completely fine to just have a gun in each hand and just shooting as she walks
by. There's not even shots going past her.
Nothing's happening around her. She's too good.
It's such a disjointed ending because it's like, oh, Seven took the high road. Oh, no, she did not take the high road at all. And then we're like, Bruce does deathbed plot exposition to Picard, which is irrelevant because this is not a Star Trek Picard podcast, and I don't need to tell you plot beats for an episode you're not going to watch afterwards. I'm certainly not going to remember them.
And then we get part two of the murder sandwich that, you know, bookends this otherwise bizarre romp.
It's like a murder sandwich with cursed murders,
really, but, you know, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, murdering Bajazel, okay, maybe we're not that bothered, but these, you know, two really gruesome, not just murder scenes, but like, I mean, it must be deliberate, I think, that they're both, you know, basically a doctor and abuse of a patient by a doctor kind of figure. In the first episode, we've got this kind of surgeon doing unspeakable things. And then we have, you know, the nice Dr. Jurati, who, again, another element of Picard that I think is slightly unclear is, you know, is Dr. Jurati a doctor of cybernetics, or is she a medical doctor, or is she both? And how did that, do you know what I mean? It's like this slightly weird thing, but she is positioned as both a kind of brilliant android scientist and also a doctor who we ought to, and she seems like this kind of nice, you know, nice young woman, basically. And I think Alison Pill does a good job. I mean, I think
Alison
kind
Pill's
of,
had a lot, had, she Alison sells Pill's it, had but, worse writing. You know, she had Aaron Sorkin writing, so she's done worse.
But Alison Pill is you know, always watchable.
It's very good.
And I think she does a good job with this, but it's, again, it's like, it's a pretty out there twist for her storyline.
Do murder? I don't think she needed
to. Do we have to have her character marred like that forever?
Apparently.
And then they have to undo, you know, not undo it, but then they have to kind of like resolve it and be like, yeah, she murdered a guy. It was a bit of a mistake, but, you know, it's all okay. It's this guy, you know, it's, well, don't go there then. If you didn't want her to be a murderer,
don't make her a murderer.
Exactly.
Like, does Star Trek
have
a problem with making women murderers? Is that the only way they have, like, the strong women? It's this misguided feminism that's been present in, we've discussed it many times, Herbert.
I'm not sure you can make the murderers, and also, it's the problem is, like, casting Alison Pill, it's like, she's your lovable murderer. Do you know what I mean? That's what they're kind of going for, and it's a bit of a tricky one. And I do think she plays it really well. Like, she does the kind of guilt and the kind of tortured aspect of it well. But it's, I don't know, again, it feels like a slightly, it's like this episode, it's randomly camp. All the camp stuff, it feels very random in the context of Picard. And then in the context of all the camp stuff, it's randomly brutal and kind of, you know, like a sort of, there's an element of kind of horror porn to it somehow, especially in that scene at the beginning, which a lot of people just couldn't cope with, you know. It's like,
body horror before. Like, you have episodes which are as horrifying as some of the scenes are, but it doesn't do it when it's trying to be funny.
Exactly.
You
wouldn't have a holodeck episode that then suddenly goes into, like, really gruesome, you know, okay, the holodeck stage is wrong, and someone's face gets half
while doing Our Man Machine.
Exactly, yeah.
But... yeah, this episode just doesn't make sense.
We have Raffi's return, which is not impactful. Yeah, she's it makes it seem like she's sulking in her room, and I don't know why she has to move out of that door for that.
Yeah, it's like, she didn't get what she wanted, as opposed to her son doesn't want to talk to her. She has burned the only bridge with her only living relative.
Mm.
She has the right to be upset, but the way they made that play out seemed, I don't know, almost immature.
This very much feels like an episode where they needed to get from one place to another plot-wise, but also they had an idea they needed to use, and that idea was Free Cloud.
Mm.
And I like the idea of Free Cloud. Like, I like the concept that at some point in, like, the 23rd century, when the Federation finally abolished money, a bunch of investment bankers went, fuck you, we're going to go over there with our own money. And the Federation just went, great, fuck off then. Just fuck off to the neutral zone. And just ignored them. Because I just think, but, like, you know, it'd be kind of nice if there was this concept that Free Cloud just exists outside of the Federation system. But it just kind of, it just seems normal. It shouldn't be. But also, It's just a very disjointed piece of storytelling. I don't even want to give it triplets because it's not cursed. It's
no,
just not
we're
enjoyable.
We are not making triplets a thing. It's been like two episodes and I'm distraught.
Now,
okay. I'm distraught that this is now part of this podcast.
Are you aware of
triplets? Mr. Vop, definitely. Mr. Vop must have triplets, surely.
No. Oh my God. Oh, no, it's happening. It's already too late.
If any of the Star Trek Picard showrunners are listening, in which case, I don't know how you've listened to the last hour or so of us dunking. We're sorry. But if Beta and Nari have arm nipples, can you let us know?
No. Why? There's so many nipples. The nipples, they keep coming up. I am in my personal hell. This is hell.
Okay. I mean, before we...
At least we didn't get, you know, at least we didn't get Rios in the Riker nipple-bearing...
What?
You know, the Angel Wong costume.
I mean, he didn't have a shirt on two episodes ago, so...
Right. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, they've got like Santiago, what's his name, can't rock or having a shirt on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really cursed, it's just not enjoyable. I mean, it's kind of silly, but like, one of the things that happens a lot in the show is we go into an episode that seems outrageously bad, the more we look at it, the more interesting it gets.
This one's
looking at why it's bad and how it's bad.
Mm.
Whereas this one, the more it looks into it, it's just kind of like...
It's just bad.
It's dead ends. And you have a lot of... I hope this is a form of therapy for you, Duncan.
Yeah. Been wasting a while. It's good to get it off my chest.
Do you know why?
Because, as I say, I lived with my feelings about this episode kind of pretty much in silence for about a week. And then I expected the entire fandom online to explode with kind of rage.
You were ready for war.
And it didn't happen. And people were like... You know, I don't know, a lot of people seem to be fine with it. And I was just, no, you're right. But
I think while I was watching Picard, I was just waiting for the next thing. So each episode, I was like, oh, we're getting there. And I didn't really...
Yeah, we were waiting for a big thing in Picard, and we sort of never got it.
I didn't mind that. I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. And that's okay.
I don't even want to quit, because quitting, I think our quitting has some sort of jest into it, but...
Yeah, it's not... It's just me generally
condemning an episode.
This is an episode that would make me slam a laptop and then close and go, what the fuck with that? This is an episode where I close the tab and sort of go, well, I guess I should do that work I should be doing.
You just kind of... Let's move on to next week. You know, we can move on. Things will
get
better.
There's like a chapter in a... you know, I haven't read Lord of the Rings in a long time. There's like a chapter of the Lord of the Rings which only exists to get the characters from one place to another. Mm. Or in a fantasy novel, it's just like, they got to do this thing to get there. And the writer doesn't really want to do it, but they got
it. Or rather, the writer wants to do it, but no one wants to read it. This is the kind of Tom Bombadil of, you know, of Star Trek Picard. It's something you have to kind of get through to
That's kind of true, because Michael Chabon wrote a 4,000-word treatise on Free Cloud. That is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But adds nothing to my enjoyment of Star Trek Picard. Unlike Linda McCormick's Last Best Hope, which added a lot to my enjoyment of Star Trek Picard.
It does, yeah. Yeah, me too.
Listening, Una, you're great. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. So yeah, I think you're right, Olivia. We can't really quit, can we?
Anytime I think about quitting, I just imagine Elmore's face in front of me. His little puppy dog eyes, and I just can't do it.
I just also think that turning what is meant to be a very seedy den of high risk scum and villainy into a farce.
It was very theatre kids. It was like they got the costumes from the closet. Everyone just picked a few.
Oh my God, it did have such theatre kid energy. Like, Papa, why are we going down? Why are we leaving Poland?
Oh.
Is all that energy. Sort of Picardy's fort. This is a steel town. No one's worked here since the 60s.
Well, I think we should conclude. Are we both not quitting? John and
I'm not
quitting. But Duncan, you came here to quit. And we know. We see the fire in your eyes. We know what has to happen.
Are you quitting, Duncan?
No, because I know it gets better. But I mean, I was as ready
That's
to
cheating.
Quit. I was
That's
as
cheating.
Ready to quit after
no.
this one as I was after Shufflepod 1.
Can't...
It's just, I don't know.
You will have to do.
Look, I didn't.
That.
I didn't quit. I didn't quit. But
whereas
I was.
You actually
but I was.
Quit.
I was very worried. I was. Whereas I actually did quit after Shufflepod 1 for about 10 years or something. But No one will find out. Since
don't worry, Duncan, one day we'll record it again.
I'm not the only one, I think, who has an issue with that episode. Although that, I mean, that weirdly is an episode that most people seem to love, which I find slightly baffling. But this one, at least, I think is a bit more divisive.
I think the Trek fandom doesn't, it's got very mixed views on Picard.
Mm.
Like, but I've never seen anybody be like, emphatically for Picard. I mean, if you are, good for you.
I love Picard. I love the Picard show overall. Like, I really enjoyed it. It worked well for me, but there were some things that didn't work for me, and this was far and away the worst of them.
Yeah. So,
it's only because you loved it so much you were so disappointed in them.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. It's true. My expectations were high and also just slightly horrified.
Yeah, I think that's a mood. But that kind of,
you know, I'm not angry, I'm disappointed. It is a little bit like the sort of, yes, like a parent or a teacher, like if your teacher found you drunk and dressed up in really stupid clothes and just arsing around with exactly with a knife. That's what it feels like a little bit. Yeah.
I will need to compress after this, but if people want to find you, Duncan, to talk about talk more about this or about whatever you do, anything, you got anything to plug
any
right
more
now,
to say about it.
While me and Olivia stare into the abyss.
You can find me on Twitter at Barrett's Books. That's B-A-R-R-E-T-T. And if you're interested in more of my thoughts on Star Trek, you can check out my podcast, Primitive Culture, over at Trek FM.
Excellent. If you want to be traumatized us more or send us your videos of bad French accents, please don't do that. You can find us at Quit Star Trek Pod. You can also email us at iquitstartrek@gmail.com. So because we are young, we don't look at that email very often because emails are for old people.
Just always refer to ageism.
Have you ever had a younger guest
on your show?
Not yet.
Because that might be an opportunity. You need to find, like, you know, I don't know, some school kid who can turn.
I'll get my younger brother on.
Because they'll all be into Clubhouse or whatever it is, you know.
They won't know it's Nintendo DS, and then we'll be horrible to them about that.
That's upsetting.
You'll get there in the end.
Oh.
But that's it for this week. And I've been John.
I have been Olivia.
And I've been royally pissed off.
I will catch you all next
time. This particular show.
Au revoir. Goodbye.